scores! Gilmore scores! The ball,
off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, it is a Tuesday, March 18th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Lots to get to this hour as we say hello from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. So, after Monday's 6-2 loss for the Flames in Toronto, Calgary gets ready to take on the New York Rangers one day later. Lots of talk about that, lots of talk about where the Flames are, and a whole lot more coming up this hour on the program, but it is a Tuesday. So, on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk, let's kick it off by saying hello to our NHL insider. It's time to say hello to Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Avenue. Or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com, Amazon, and a whole lot more. And from a very warm weather locale at GM's meetings, Frank Saravalli joins us right now. Hello, Frank. How are you?
I'm good. I wasn't going to rub it in, but if you insist.
I mean, you already did over text. So, did you see my...
Yeah, I said...
See my response?
Just for some candor for our audience, I said, Pat, the sooner you can get me out of here, the better, because my seat at the beach bar awaits. So you're the only thing separating me from a Corona and lime.
Yeah, well, I think we're gonna make this a full hour hit today. No, I'm just kidding. We'll get you out of here. We'll get you back to the beach bar here.
You can make it a full hour hit. Doesn't mean my phone won't magically run out of battery in the meantime.
Oops, I'm going into a tunnel. I'm breaking up. Hey, I will get to GM's meetings in just a couple of minutes because I'm fascinated and interested to see if there's anything that comes out of these meetings this time around in Florida. What did you make of that loss for the Flames Monday on Amazon against the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Tough one. No other way to say it other than that. I mean, obviously, this was a Leaf team that was highly motivated. They had been scuffling of late. The whispers had been growing louder, particularly since the Mitch Marner no trade denial. And the temperature was getting turned up on them and not necessarily by the Flames. And so sometimes a good lesson in terms of trying to meet the moment and the level that's going to be required for this team over the next 16 games to get in.
A lot of fans, I saw this on our text line on our post-game show Monday night, saw it on social media. A lot of people in Calgary worried that, you know, they go into Toronto, the center of the hockey universe, and Dustin Wolf gets the start.
Self-proclaimed center of the hockey universe.
Self-proclaimed hockey of the universe, yes. Yeah. But the NHL's largest market in terms of interest, I think, is fair to say. And Dustin Wolf gets the start, was spectacular in the first period. Then the entire team has the wheels fall off in the second. And for the first time all year, a Flames goalie gets the hook in game. A lot of worry that, you know, might hurt his Calder Trophy chances. I'm curious, how valid is that worry in your mind?
Not valid for me. First off, nothing of any player's candidacy is going to come back to one game. Second, because it happened to the Toronto Maple Leafs doesn't amplify it for me and shouldn't amplify it for any voter. And third, it's all going to come down to the results in the end. I mean, I've said this before and I'll say it again. If the Calgary Flames make the Stanley Cup playoffs, with the lack of scoring support that they've had, Dustin Wolf is getting the number one spot on my ballot. Mm-hmm. If they don't, he's still going to be on my ballot and high on my ballot. But I'll be honest, the other part of this is, with no disrespect to Macklin Celebrini, he hasn't played in a meaningful game all year. And Lane Hutson has in Montreal. If you're looking for reasons why this Montreal Canadiens team has rebounded from one year to the next to be in the mix, it's because someone like Hudson has injected 50-plus points from the blue line.
Yep.
So I think it's not a Hart Trophy case in the sense that, hey, if you don't make the playoffs, you're out. But I think if you're able to help push your team into the postseason, that really supports your candidacy.
Does feel like a weekly check-in right now when it comes to this playoff race. You've got Calgary, you've got Vancouver, you've got suddenly red-hot St. Louis, and you've got this pesky Utah group that hasn't gone away all year either. And so on that weekly check-in for you, Frankie, who's got the best chance on March 18th? Who would be number one on your power rankings to get into that last playoff spot in the West?
I know that St. Louis has played well of late, and their record would indicate that they're the hottest of the four teams in their last 10. I'm just not a believer in the Blues. I don't think that whether it's the present day or the future direction that the Blues are going anywhere anytime fast. I think they've got a good coach. I think they've got a couple good players, and I think they've got a lot of aging vets that they can't really do much with roster turnover and no trade clauses and high cap hits. Your question isn't who's best prepared for the next 5 years, in which case the answer to that is Utah. Mm-hmm. But I still think Utah this year has not just a ton to play for with their market and making a statement in their inaugural season. I also think top to bottom, including Vancouver, I think they're the most skilled team. Like, I think they've got a line of future stars, if they're not close to that point already, led by Dylan Gunther, that team is poised to make some noise.
I know you took note of this recently on social, but Elias Pettersson, who helped turn Vancouver's night around last Wednesday at the Scotiabank, saddled them and got them, helped get them a crucial point. Feels like finally, for the first time, or first time in a long time, or maybe first time this season, his game is a whole lot closer to the game that Canucks fans have been looking for. Does Elias Pettersson playing his best hockey when it seems to matter most, does that change the outlook on where he's going to play next season?
It does for me, because I think what it does, if he can finish this year on a similar note, is it takes off the table for the need for the Vancouver Canucks to act out of desperation and a fear of that no trade clause kicking in on July 1st, that they have to do something in order to move that contract before they lose control. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't trade him, but I think it significantly ratchets down the temperature and pressure that they're facing to make a decision on that one way or the other, and it allows them time and space to punt and make that decision later. And yes, I know that means the no trade clause kicks in, but if he can get back to the level of player that he used to be at, and look, people have been, I laughed when you asked the question, because just go look at the replies and the quote tweets from that tweet saying, like, oh, you're not allowed to say anything nice about Elias Pettersson, not after the way you've been trashing him. And I'm just like, I don't trash anyone. I just say it like it is. And when you play good, you get good things said about you or good facts reported about you. And when you play poorly, you get bad facts reported about you. Like, that's how life works. And he was in a spot where earning that kind of coin, $11+ million a year, like we were talking about one goal per $1 million. This season, no matter what, is still not going to end in a pretty way. I think he could kind of max out at 60 points. But to shed that idea that this is a total disaster, I think would be a pretty big thing for the Canucks moving forward. Not to mention his confidence.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, and last one on this Western Conference playoff race, Frank. But, you know, you've got those four teams that we just talked about fighting for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. And right now you've got a somewhat scuffling Vegas team on top of the Pacific. You've got a scuffling Oilers team that maybe feels like they're figuring it out. And since the Four Nations, and definitely getting healthy. And an LA team that's been rolling but had that roll halted on Monday night with a loss against Minnesota. Just when you take a look at the three teams that are almost certainly going to make up the three Pacific Division playoff spots, Vegas, LA, and Edmonton, what's your read on this race and how it all might shake out there?
It's really hard to say. I mean, tell me what Oiler team is standing up. Is it the one that can go on a run and win or rip off 8 or 10 games in a row? Or is it one with subpar goaltending, a relatively disengaged, and maybe disengaged isn't the right word, but Connor McDavid hasn't been this season to his own standard. Like, he's going to have the most quiet 100-point year that anyone can remember. And Leon Draisaitl has not just stolen the show, but beyond that, he's picked up for a team that as a whole has really struggled at varying points. When it comes to Vegas or LA or these other teams, like, I think they've all fought a bit of inconsistency at varying points of this year. LA is a team that for a stretch of time in 2025, kind of to start the new year, had scuffled a bit. And Vegas is a team that didn't necessarily, you know, they started fine kind of, and they've had some dips at varying points in their game where they've shown some holes. So it's tight. It's going to come down to not just Vegas kind of pulling away a little bit, but what kind of consistency can the Edmonton Oilers show? Because I think they're the biggest question mark in that spot.
We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us on Tuesday here on Flames Talk, talking Flames and a whole lot more. And you are awaiting a seat at the beach bar because you're in Florida. General managers meetings this spring. What's been on the docket? What have we learned? I guess just give us the kind of big picture view of GM's meetings this time around.
So to answer what you hinted at before, will there be any rule changes that come from this GM meeting? I think the answer to that is very likely to be no.
Okay.
And they've spent much of the first 2 days really drilling down on coaches' challenge, whether it's been offside review or goalie interference. And they polled the general managers on 54 different clips of videos. And wanted to know, did we get this right? Did we get it wrong? Is this the way you'd like to see the game called? And they provided some data today saying that of the 54 clips that they reviewed, they were all on the same page 52 of those 54 times. And even in the two that they disagreed on, the split of the vote was 19 to 13. So I think there's a couple lessons there. One, when you withdraw the emotion that's attached to some of these calls for teams, that it becomes a little bit more clear. And I think, two, when you begin to go over the league's process and how they get to this point with video review via their checklist that they ask questions about, it's not 100% exact, obviously, because it's subjective and there's no way to be that, you know, black and white. It's very gray. That I just feel like I come out of this meeting with a better understanding of what exactly it's supposed to look like. Again, doesn't mean that it's always going to meet that threshold, but I have a better view today after they brought us into the meetings yesterday to watch and understand it. I have a better view what goalie interference is that they're looking for than before.
How important is that to kind of have that clarity and have all 32 decision makers kind of have that fairly fresh of mind going into the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I think it's enormous. I mean, for every stakeholder involved, like for managers in their conversations with coaches, for coaches in their conversation with video coaches who are more involved in the process than ever before. Like, they want to provide the correct recommendation to their head coach in real time based on what they're seeing and what their application of the rules is. And then I think it's important also from a media perspective, because how often do you hear a broadcast or someone talking in an intermission or some jackal like me on the radio talking about a call, and you hear, well, I just don't know what the standard is. I can't get it right. It's inconsistent. And it may still be those things. Like, there's no absolution here, and I want to be 100% clear about that. But I at least now know here are the four things they're looking for. Is the skate of the player in the blue or white paint? Did they think that this was deliberate or incidental? Was there something that happened to the goalie that impeded his play? And was there anything that the official saw on the ice that he didn't see, or saw in the video that he didn't see on the ice? And so you kind of take those things and you smash them together, and yeah, there's going to be changes. Goalies, as we've seen this week in particular, they understand a bit better what the standard is, and they're going to try and game the system as much as they can because they're being pretty well protected right now. But it's a moving target, and I just feel like explaining it now is easier today than it was 2 days ago.
Frank, you just posted this a few minutes before we went on. So one of the things that has come from these meetings, almost 750 fewer power plays awarded this season year over year. What should we take from that or read into that?
Well, I got to give some credit to my crew at Daily Faceoff. Paul Peduti is the guy who first wrote a story a couple weeks ago about the decline in offense as a whole. And then my colleague Jason Greger pointed out and did some of the homework on the numbers. And it's an amazing drop year over year. Like, we're talking about some teams have 50 fewer power plays this year than they did at the same exact time last year. And I guess I don't quite buy it. I talked to the NHL senior or executive vice president for officiating, Stephen Walkham, today. And he said essentially that they don't believe that their rate of missed calls has gone up. In other words, they're not missing any more calls. So I said to him, okay, if you're not missing any more calls and power plays are down 12% year over year, what's your reasoning for that? What's your explanation? And he said, well, players are just conforming to the rules. And I'm going, the rules are the same as last year. You mean to tell me that they're playing 12% cleaner hockey, 750 fewer power plays year over year? Like, I don't believe it. NHL GMs that I talked to in the story, they don't think that the game is being played any more cleanly. And I don't really know what to pinpoint other than it must come back to the officials and the way the game is being called that serves as an explanation for why that's the case. Like, this is a historic low that we're talking about. It'll be the lowest number of power play opportunities in any season since the stat began being tracked in 1963-64.
Wow.
Pre-expansion. So it's a long time ago and a crazy low rate. And I think the league kind of shrugs and says, hey, nothing to see here, move along, because it's been able to be masked by the fact that 21.6 of power plays percent are they're being scored on. Teams are converting at a historically high rate on the power play, which has covered up a lot of what we might otherwise be feeling if there's that many fewer power plays.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple more with Frank Saravalli with us from Florida and general managers meetings. Any feel from being around there on where things stand on Sam Bennett and potential extension talks with the Florida Panthers?
I think people are cautiously optimistic in Florida that a deal will get done. Florida has different cap considerations this time around. Obviously, the cap is increasing, but they swapped out Seth Jones and 5 more years of his deal for Spencer Knight. Eventually, they're going to have to pay Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, there's a lot of things to consider from Florida's perspective. And I think the tough part about Sam Bennett is doing all of that in relation to a guy who doesn't put up big regular season numbers. And I don't need to tell you that. You guys lived it in Calgary. Mm-hmm. But he's such a proven playoff performer that that's really, I think, the toughest part about building an NHL team is you have to have a team that can win in the regular season and get you to the playoffs. And then you've got to have a different team or different style of team that can make its way through 16 wins and 4 rounds of an absolute slog and do it with a high quotient of skill, toughness, and size and clutch genes. And Sam Bennett has a ton of those characteristics. We just don't see a ton of it in the regular season. And that's the only time there is a salary cap, though. So I think it's a bit of push and pull. I think Florida definitely wants to keep him. I think he's also looking for a significant raise. And they're going to have to balance those two things out.
Do you manage to lasso Craig Conroy at all? Have you been able to get any FaceTime with the Flames GM down there?
He's been very slippery this week. I would say he's one of those guys that has perfected the art of walking through the room without being seen.
Very nice. Very nice. That is something that you need to learn as you go further and further on as being a general manager in the league.
He hasn't mastered it quite like Brad Treliving has this week, I think he might run if you put a microphone in front of him, given all that's gone on with Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, maybe one Calgary GM taking it from another in that case.
Last one for you, and you wrote about this over at Daily Faceoff. It is that time of year. We're into March. It's college free agent time, and you've got the Flames potentially linked to one of the bigger name 2025 college free agents. What can you tell us there?
Yeah, so I think they've kept pretty close tabs on Carter King from Denver. He's the captain there, 2-time national champion. Not a big guy at 5'10" by any stretch, but he's someone that has turned heads with his compete, and he's done just about everything that David Carl has asked of him. And he's someone that's had a ton of success. He was also nominated this year for his conference Defensive Forward of the Year. So he's been a consistent goal scorer, a consistent two-way player. And look, sometimes these guys that are college undrafted free agents, they're nothing. And sometimes they're something. But when you are the Flames and you're looking for more pieces and it doesn't cost you anything other than maybe not even a lot of cash, just a little bit of cash, if the player's on a two-way deal, that you take a chance. And especially Carter King being from Calgary, mm-hmm. I think that just makes it even more special if you can pull it off and give him the opportunity. So not saying it's a done deal or it's going to happen, but I know that they've been monitoring.
Great stuff, as always, Frank. I appreciate the time, and go get yourself to that beach bar. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for doing this, my friend.
Yeah, and you didn't even get me out of here any more quickly than any other time, but thank you.
I thought I'd try, but I didn't really feel that motivated.
Yeah, I know. You didn't feel that bad. I get it.
Bye, buddy. Talk to you next week.
See you later.
Frank Saravalli is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider from GM's meetings in Florida, and he joins us every Tuesday. Some Flame stuff in there, some Pacific Division stuff in there, and obviously GM's meetings as well. And Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com, brought to you each and every week by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now the Daily Flames Roundtable on this Tuesday edition of the program. Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport, it's Pat Steinberg. We say hello to Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Hello, Vic.
Hello, Patty. Good to be here.
good to have you.
Good to see your smiling face.
And we also say hello to Derek Wills to complete our Daily Flames roundtable on this Tuesday. And so Flames have played the last two games without Connor Zary. He was suspended two games for that elbow Wednesday against Vancouver, missed the Colorado game and missed the Toronto game on Monday. So he will return to the lineup on Tuesday night against the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden. And what, gentlemen, does that return for Zary? What does it or what could it mean for this Flames lineup?
Well, it gives them another option at center. And without Michael Backlund, they could use as many options up the middle as they can get. And I do wonder if Connor Zary would have been playing at center, maybe not from start to finish, but at some point in time in the last couple of games with Backlund out. So we'll see where Zary slots in tonight. If he's, again, in a fourth line role, which, again, without Backlund would be surprising for me. But he has spent quite a bit of time playing with Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg of late. And if not, then where he fits in the top nine, if it's up the middle or if it's on the wing. But I'm hoping that we see Connor Zary come back and look more like the player he did before he missed 15 games with a knee injury, because, guys, he has struggled to find his game and he has struggled to produce points. He's pointless in 10 of the last 11 games that he's played in. The only game that he had points in, he had two goals in that 6-3 victory over the Flyers in Philadelphia back on March 4th, but he just hasn't looked as explosive. He hasn't looked as dynamic since coming back. So hopefully a couple of games off and a chance to reset and maybe get a little closer to 100% will help him get back to being a guy who I think was as dangerous offensively as any player on this team prior to that knee injury.
Yeah, for a large part of the season, Willsy, I thought that he was perhaps Calgary's most dynamic forward, and it didn't necessarily reflect 100% in the goals, assist, points if you're checking the statistics, but he seemed to be one of the more dangerous players game in, game out, and we haven't necessarily seen that from him post Four Nations face-off onward, but a two-game reset here might help fix that. Listen, he's one of their most important forwards both today and 5 years down the road. In terms of his skill set, he brings something that is unique in the sense that Calgary Flames don't have a lot of high-end talent, and he fits the mold from that perspective. And then you layer in the fact that the Flames are without Michael Backlund and are very thin at forward with Zary and Backlund out over the course of the past couple of games. His return to the lineup is absolutely massive. You check basically any metric offensively, and we're talking about a Calgary Flames team that has struggled to score all season long, don't get me wrong, but you check the any sort of metric, whether it's literally goals, assists, points, points per game, expected goals for, Corsi, so on and so forth. He's in either the top three or the top four amongst forwards across the entire board. So getting a player of that ilk, that stature, that impact is absolutely significant, especially when you look at what's missing with Michael Backlund. Again, they're not replacing one another. Backlund out, Connor Zary doesn't come in and fill the role of Michael Backlund. But the fact that you've got a team that's so devoid of scoring, getting back one of their most highly skilled forwards, you can't understate enough the importance of Zary coming back.
Yeah, I mean, if he comes back and is an impact maker, then it's and I mean, I think he will be at some point, and maybe a couple more games off, and this time a couple games healthily off might spark something in him. But I mean, look, I don't think the Flames are going to become a high scoring team at any point in the final 16. I don't think magically we're going to see the offense turn into a strength as opposed to a weakness. It's probably just not going to happen. But in saying that, any help you can get and any addition you can make that can meaningfully help the offense, then yeah, it's a big boost. And getting Zary back is something that could meaningfully help the offense, because he is, when going, one of their more dynamic forwards. And so that I think is important, and I think he will add a little bit of pop to the lineup. So for a lineup that is sorely in need of offensive pop, I mean, they're in need of a pop a lot of places. Their defensive metrics have really slipped in the last couple of months, and we know they're not scoring right now. So getting Zary back will help. I am fascinated to see if he starts at center, and if he does start at center, does he stay there, so on and so forth. Do they move Sharon Govich back to the wing as number 17 continues to struggle mightily? And I don't think it helped at all putting him down the middle. So I'm curious if they put Jerry right back there or if they keep him on the wing where he was before. But nonetheless, yes, I do think Jerry's return to the lineup is something that should be and hopefully will be helpful for this group.
Yeah, I mean, it can't hurt, right? I don't think he was hurting the team when he was playing. He just wasn't helping as much as he had prior to the injury when he just was way more dangerous offensively and a lot more productive as far as the goals, assistant points go. But, you know, he's a talented player. And guys, I wonder if he felt bad for what happened. I mean, Ryan Huska said that, you know, he did the right thing in the sense that he stood up for a teammate after a hit that he didn't like, but that's not who Connor Zary is. And the Flames could have used him in the last couple of games. I know they scored 2 goals per game, but they got a garbage time goal against the Maple Leafs last night. So throw that one out. And that's 1.5 goals per game without Connor Zary, which isn't all that far off the Flames season average, but you know, even one more goal could have helped them potentially pick up a point or to in one of the last couple games. So I feel like if I was Connor Zary, that I kind of let my team down by doing something that I shouldn't have done. And I'm convinced that as a smart kid, you'll learn an important lesson from that. But, you know, the Flames need to win this hockey game tonight, not mathematically, but everybody else is playing. You got a chance to climb back into that second wild card spot in the Western Conference with a win, regardless of what happens in those other games. But if you lose and some other teams around you win, maybe you're 4 points out and heading in the wrong direction. So looking forward to seeing Connor Zary back tonight and hoping we see the old Connor Zary and not the guy who just didn't look like himself after coming back from that injury.
Well, and to your point, Wilsey, about maybe letting the team down a little bit by taking that ill-advised penalty, having to sit the last two games because of the suspension that followed. He should be a house on fire coming back into the lineup, and the Flames playing the second of back-to-back games absolutely need that injection of energy with Zary returning. And if that comes with some offensive pop as well, much needed, because as you mentioned, not a lot of scoring going on in the games he was out, and the Flames as a whole this season, 32nd in the NHL at 2.55 goals per game. Any return to the lineup for anybody that can inject some energy, some life, and some offense into the group is going to be a welcomed addition.
It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Gents, the Flames have been without Michael Backlund for the last 8-plus periods. So second and third period and overtime against Vancouver, then the whole game against Colorado, the whole game against Toronto. Guys, what have they... What have they missed, or what are the noticeable areas you're seeing that the Flames are missing Michael Backlund right now?
Well, they miss him in so many ways. Even Michael Backlund at, what was he playing at, 60%, 70%, maybe 80% over the last couple of months was an important player for them because he did so much heavy lifting. The tough matchups, going up against the other team's top players, night in, night out, at home, shift in, shift out, when Ryan Huska could get last change and chase those matchups a little bit harder. The defensive zone starts, the penalty killing, the face-offs. So the Flames haven't been a good face-off team all season long, but in two games without Michael Backlund, they are the worst face-off team in the NHL at 37.0%. Ooh. And that hurt them in games and in losses to the Avalanche and the Maple Leafs. So when you're playing against high-end teams like that, you want to start with the puck as often as you can. And they just didn't do it enough in their last couple of games. So, I mean, they miss him in so many ways. I hesitate to say that they miss his leadership, because I do think that even without him, they have a strong leadership group and a fairly large leadership group. We've talked a lot about the 6 guys, but you throw Ryan Lomberg in there and you've got 7 guys who, and probably more guys who have been very vocal leaders and not just talking the talk, but walking the walk this season. But, you know, Michael Backlund, I think, probably carries a little bit more weight with his history with this team, 17 seasons as a member of the Flames and as the team's captain. I think that means something. So I think they've missed him in almost countless ways in the last 2-plus games. But They're going to have to get by without their captain for a while. So I don't want to hear the Flames making excuses while we don't have Michael Backlund. I mean, there are teams around the NHL that have dealt with way more injuries than the Flames have this season. So they've got to find a way to get through these games and hopefully into the playoffs without him, because I don't know that they're going to have him for the majority of games as we head down the stretch here. And if you get him back, hopefully when you get him back, he's going to be a big shot in the arm. And guys, hopefully, again, if and when he does come back, he's closer to 100% than I think he's been for the last little while.
Listen, you're talking to the vice president of the Michael Backlund fan club right here.
And, you know, who's the president?
Soon you'll hear from the president. And even I might have underestimated the value that Michael Backlund brings to this group, particularly this season. When you talk about the Flames' identity, check for your chances, work hard for 60 minutes, details defensively. Like every single one of the criteria or the things you have to check off for a successful Calgary Flames team are things that Michael Backlund has done. And in his absence, to me, I don't see a checking line whatsoever. I do not see a line that you can point to and be, okay, that's going to be the line that does the heavy lifting. And without Michael Backlund, the group as a whole, all 12 forwards, all four lines, don't necessarily slot the same way that you're comfortable with if you had Michael Backlund, because you go, okay, well, who's going to face the other team's top lines the most? Well, now it's kind of a little bit of a jump ball, and we saw Kadri and Huberdeau do it against Nathan MacKinnon, for example, and that, while that was successful on the shutting down MacKinnon front for the period and a half that assignment was done, it also nullified the offense that the Kadri and Huberdeau line can bring. And then when you're looking at matchups, okay, who's going to shut down a Matthews or a Marner? Who's going to shut down that other line with Tavares and Nylander? Well, the answer was nobody. And again, you're on the road, so you don't have last chance, so it's not a hard matchup, but still. And then even going back to the Vancouver game, the second and third periods, Elias Pettersson looked significantly better. Sorry.
Elias left the game.
Elias is the guy that...
And that's why Zeri was suspended, ironically.
Anyways, too many Pettersons on that team to start with. Don't lead me down that path.
Tell me about it.
To me, like, just the Calgary Flames aren't the same team without Michael Backlund, and I didn't necessarily expect his absence to be as damning. I don't know if that's the right adjective I'm looking for, but... The moral of the story here is he is just so significantly important to this group, despite the role. Again, it's not a goals, assist, points thing that, you know, oh my goodness, how are they going to replace Michael Backlund on that front? It's the entire 200-foot game. It's the penalty killing. It's the shutdown role. It's everything we've come to know and expect from Michael Backlund. And one of those things where you don't know what you have until you don't have it.
So a couple of things. I mean, I don't think the third period against Vancouver goes the way it does if Backlund's out there. I don't think the Maple Leafs go 3-for-3 on the power play on Monday night if Backlund is penalty killing. I mean, they didn't even touch the puck on the second two power play goals for Toronto. And I don't know if that happens if Backlund's playing. But here's where I've noticed it the most, guys. In the two full games they've played without Michael Backlund, what two lines have been the most, kind of the biggest X factor lines in wins for Colorado and Toronto? Their third line, right? It was the Parker Kelly, Ross Colton line that killed the Flames on Friday night. And it was especially in the first half of the game before the power plays took over. It was the Max Domi, Bobby McMahon, and Nick Robertson line that killed the Flames. Those are both third lines on the opposing team. And when you don't have Backlund, not only do you not have your guy that goes head to head with the best player on, or the best line on the other team, or in road games, one of the two best lines on the other team, but you also now go from having, you know, a top nine where I think you at the very least feel comfortable in your matchups most of the time with Backlund and the heavy lifting that he does and all the D-zone draws that he takes. It frees up the Kadri line and it freed up the Frost line. Well, now all of a sudden you've got Kadri's line taking on heavier minutes. You've got Frost line taking on heavier minutes. And then that Sharangovich line is also taking on more responsibility. And in the Colorado game, it was the, if I'm just going back to check, the Colorado game, it was the Sharangovich line that got kicked in the teeth, and the Toronto game, it was the Frost line that was underwater going up against third lines. And I don't think there's a coincidence that all of a sudden, I don't think the Flames have matchup edges in every single game they play, but at the very least, you feel comfortable that maybe you can saw some of these matchups off. Well, you go from not having Backlund and three centers in your top nine that you're comfortable with to now having Kadri and Frost and forcing Sharon Govich, who we all know is struggling mightily, into a center ice role. And it just, I think it takes a real hit at your matchup game. So to me, I don't think there's any coincidence that in two straight losses, the Flames have been really hurt by opposing third lines. To me, that's a real indication as to how much they're missing Michael Backlund 5-on-5. Oh, and in each of the last two games, double-digit high-danger scoring chances against at 5-on-5, 11 against Colorado, and 14 against Toronto on Monday night.
Listen, guys, we knew the Flames weren't going to replace Michael Backlund with one player. It was going to have to be done by a committee. But one of, maybe more than one of, but one of these three guys has to step up. And if two or three of them step up, great. Yegor Sharangovich, Morgan Frost, and Connor Zeri. They need to not replace Michael Backlund, because you can't replace the captain with one guy with all that he brings to the table, but someone needs to step up and center the checking line. You know, if that's Yegor Sharangovich, who I actually thought was a little bit better last night. Not many Flames were good, and I thought he was okay in that game against the Maple Leafs. Whether it's Morgan Frost, and I don't expect Connor Zeri to center a checking line, but if he does end up centering one of your middle six lines, then he's going to have to get back to being the player that we know he can be. And the good news is, I think all three of those guys do have room to grow and play at a higher level. So if the Flames are going to get through without their captain, they're going to need one or two or all three of those guys to help them pick up the slack. And this is going to be a tough game tonight, guys. I mean, the Rangers aren't as scary as they were last season when they won the President's Trophy and went to the third round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I don't think they're as good as the Flames' last two opponents, the Avalanche or the Maple Leafs. But this is a desperate team sitting in the second wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Guys, I was looking today. On January 1st, they were 7 points out of the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, with seven teams between them and the second wild card spot. Today, they sit in that spot. Mm-hmm. So the Rangers have played some really good hockey in 2025, and this is not going to be an easy game for the Flames, but it feels like a big one, doesn't it?
It does, and they kind of all do, but especially after a 6-2 loss against Toronto the prior game on the first half of the back-to-back, absolutely, it feels like a big bounce-back night, and the Flames are going to have to if this playoff race is going to go their way. Thank you, Wilsey. We will do it again on Wednesday. Appreciate it, pal.
All right, enjoy the game, guys.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Taylor Dingman, our outstanding producers, and the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, the fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport.